Chapter 11. The First of Springtime. Iridan plodded down the halls to the practice yard. He knew that this being his wedding day would offer no reprieve from his warlock training. He had asked. The world seemed a bit fuzzy, but he hurt less than he had before a half bottle of wine had eased his searing headache and made the soreness in his shoulders and hips, a remembrance of the previous day's beatings, easier to ignore. He squinted his eyes and blinked hard against the intrusion of bright daylight as the sun shone low in the sky when he exited the palace. He saw his father and his opponents for the morning waiting for him, as well as more curious onlookers than were usually permitted to watch his training. Jafin and Mold were replaced days ago as his antagonists. He had gotten the better of them a few times too many for Rashan's liking. The new boys were almost fully trained, carrying the title of squire officially. Bairn and Colm were their names, and Iridan had taken an instant dislike to them.
"Morning, little warlock," Colm called out to him.
He stood more than a full head taller than Iridan, and was close to Brannis's size, though he had not finished filling out his body with muscle the way Brannis had.
"We won't be having it easy on you. No weddings going on in the yard," Bairn added.
Bairn lacked the size and reach of Colm, but he was the stronger fighter of the two.
"We'll keep from bruising the important bits, though, eh?"
He turned and winked to Colm.
"Braggarts, if Rashan was not here to protect you, I could turn you to ash and you know it."
Ever since the two of them had taken over his arms practice, Iridan had been limping his way to bed each night. Unlike with the younger boys, Iridan could not wait for these two to make mistakes. They did not make any that he could notice. Rashan had picked from among the best at the School of Arms. Iridan wondered whether he would begin facing veteran soldiers if he survived long enough to beat these two. With the beatings he had suffered at their hands, though, he wondered if he would make it.
"Enough talk. Arm yourselves and get to work," Rashan snapped.
Iridan had noticed that the warlock spoke differently depending on his audience. Privately, he was friendly, thoughtful, and soft-spoken. Around the inner circle, he was an orator, projecting confidence and weaving tapestries of logic and rhetoric. Among lesser underlings, especially soldiers, he was short-tempered, all business, even rude. Iridan took up his sword, hardwood covered in padding. He looked at Colm and Bairn with their bared steel and thought it unfair.
"They are better swordsmen than I am. They are both stronger than me. I still ache from yesterday's training. I have no patience for this nonsense this morning."
Iridan had enough troubles weighing on his mind already. Colm struck first, a probing thrust that Iridan batted away as Bairn circled to get around him. It was much like the tactic Jafin and Moln had used against him, but more polished in its execution. Iridan spun to meet the attack he knew would be coming from his flank, parrying it just in time to be struck from behind as Colm recovered and lunged for him. The attack struck Iridan's shielding spell, but he felt it. Colm followed up with an overhand chop that caught Iridan in the shoulder before he could get his sword up. The padded blade struck a glancing blow against Colm's arm, but did nothing to disrupt the squire as he pressed the attack. As Iridan tried to defend himself from Colm's onslaught, he saw Bairn in his ether vision, closing from behind. Iridan dove to the side and rolled, but the maneuver had not surprised his opponents. They pursued quickly and were upon Iridan as soon as he gained his feet.
"At least they are both in front of me for now."
He tried to mount a counteroffensive, but Bairn handily stopped his two-handed downward hacking attack with just his one-handed blade. Colm's blade had struck him hard on the chest as Bairn used the momentum of Iridan's strike to force his blade away from where it could parry the attack.
"You are not even trying," Rashan called from the edge of the yard,
where he was seated and talking with a group of sorcerers and nobles. After his admonishment, the warlock turned his attention back to the conversation. Rage bubbled up in Iridan.
"He wasn't even watching when he said that. He's just goading me."
Iridan drew in a bit of ether.
If he's going to complain no matter what I do, I will at least save myself the beating I will take.
Roshan's rules included never using magic on his practice opponents, but technically, he was not going to use it on them. Iridan's muscles surged as he infused them with ether. It was not quite magic as such, but similar to a surge of adrenaline. As with any ether directed inside a sorcerer's body, there was a risk to it, but if Iridan was to become a warlock, then risk would be his lifelong companion. The next cut of Colm's blade hit the air, and Iridan skipped sideways faster than the squire could anticipate. As Baron followed with a slash of his own, Iridan's blade hummed through the air, meeting the steel sword head-on and nearly wrenching it from Baron's grasp. He launched an attack of his own at Colm, repeating the same overhand strike he had tried against Baron, but with the force of an ogre behind it. Colm tried to parry the blow, but had not the strength to divert it. His sword was swept out of the way as the padded practice blade crashed into his collarbone with a crunch. The young squire cried out in agony as he crumpled to the ground. Baron had already recovered and was trying to take Iridan from behind. Iridan whirled and used the advantage of his longer weapon to catch Baron in the ribs before he could make an attack of his own. So swift had Iridan's blade been that the squire could not even get his sword in the way in time to slow it. The blow lifted him from his feet and threw him two body lengths to the side, where he fell unmoving. Iridan was panting with exertion and exhilaration.
I beat them. Maybe I cheated, but I won. In a real battle, that is all that matters.
Much better, Roshan called out, clapping in appreciation as he excused himself from his guests and walked toward Iridan.
I waited nearly a full season for you to realize that.
You did not use a bit of ether on them. Well done. You are not angry with me? Iridan asked.
That was cheating.
Your goal was to best them with swords and to learn how to fight. You have seen the futility of fighting purely defensively and took that lesson hard, Roshan said. One day soon we will sort this mess out and have an emperor again. You will serve him. When that day comes, you must understand that results matter, not methods. If you were given a goal and a bunch of rules, worry about the goal. If you cannot achieve it within the rules, break them. There are no punishments for warlocks who take matters into their own hands to get done what needs doing. Emperors will cluck their tongues and tell you to listen better next time, but they will forget such trespasses much more quickly than any failure. They need to know that anything they wish done, they have but to give the order.
The ones that learn wisdom find out that sometimes those orders necessitate unpleasant messes.
They learn then to limit such orders to true needs, rather than whim. You wish them to think of you as an attack dog, not a caged songbird. Iridan looked pensive as he left the yard, given a reprieve from drawing against Dolvain, who was acting as his oathkeeper for the wedding. Instead, Iridan retired to his chambers to try to relax and refresh himself for the noontime ceremony. It would be the last quiet respite he expected to have for some years hence. A soldier was sent to bring aid for the fallen squires, but it was for show. Roshan knew from ages of experience in battle that neither would survive the wounds Iridan had inflicted.
We're going over the ship with polish and cloth now, sir, Captain Drekker reported. All else is as ready as we know how to make it, considering this is new to all of us. I expect once we see it in the field, we will have suggestions on how to improve it. The captain was as ambitious and capable a man as Brannis could find in Cadran's neglected navy. With islands of ice to their south, Cadran fleets largely patrolled the waterways for smugglers and ventured out to the waters off the eastern shore mainly as escorts. Fully self-sufficient within its borders, Cadran played little in the affairs of Vaedras's naval powers. Their navy was tiny for an empire so vast.
Very well, Brennus said. There will be men with flags up on the palace roof,
When they signal, just loop around a few circuits. Let the trumpeters play their fanfare and head back to port. Exchange those musicians for bowmen and be off as soon as possible thereafter. Avoid flying near the palace as you leave the city,
so as not to disrupt the feast.
Aye, sir. We are fine for show, but none want to see us actually working. Is that about the right of it?
Drekker was a plain-spoken, direct man.
Something like that. Same with me, I suppose, at least for today.
Brannis was clad in fine raiment, befitting his station.
He wore black silk under a sleeveless short coat
that bore the Solaran crest, along with gray hose that did little to keep his legs warm. The first day of springtime, though it was, Cadrus was very far south.
No armor for me today. Too gaudy, the warlock said, and I cannot disagree. I would prefer fewer eyes on me today than I usually draw.
No trouble about that today, I'm thinking, sir, Drekker replied. I was just a boy when Emperor Daris was wed, and I do not recall this much fuss.
Well, I think you were probably put on your father's shoulders to watch the parade, and little more. Of course, it seemed less than it was. This time you get to be a part of the show, and see how much time we waste on it that could be better spent preparing to fight Magrin at Mune, Brannis said.
Well, these things seem a bit more frisky than a ship at sea, and faster than any vessel that has set in water. We draft nothing but fog now, unless we run amiss.
2 days ought to see it in Mune, Drekker said.
On the subject of running amiss, do not fly over the wedding site. Aim wide of it and circle the perimeter. If anything goes wrong, I do not want trumpets, musicians, or, I dare say, ships falling into the guests, Brannis said.
Anything you should be telling me about these that I don't know? Drekker asked.
Brannis could not tell if his suspicion was feigned or if he was masking real concern.
No, I think you were already aware that these are the first of their kind, that I drew them up from plans I saw in a dream, and that I dropped out of the academy before learning proper rune theory.
Brannis smiled reassuringly.
What could go wrong?
Roshan was surrounded by a pack of ravenous functionaries, pestering him with last-moment details that absolutely required his personal attention. The wine steward did not have enough of the chosen vintage for everyone at the feast. Could they switch, or should they have two different ones? The Archons had decided to bring more of their household servants and now outnumbered the Solarans by some 50 guests. Should some be seated among the Solarans, or would it be best to just leave the sides unbalanced? Some fifth circle sorcerer brought news via the speaking stone in Mune that Temple Hill had been taken the previous night. Should they relay any new orders? A young knight had been sent to inquire about the circumstances of the deaths of two squires earlier in the morning. The Blood Scholars wanted his seal on the wedding documents. Bring up the second vintage. Half the guests could not tell a Tamron vintage from horse piss. Just let the unaffiliated guests balance the seating. Marshal Brannis has that situation under control. All is according to his expectations. It was an accident in training. Please pass my sympathies on to their families and see that they want for nothing. I have not seen my personal seal in over 100 winters. Make do for now. I will not hold up the ceremony for such nonsense.
Roshan paused, causing those keeping pace with him to jostle one another in an effort not to walk into the warlock. There was a faint, familiar tingling in the ether. Roshan smiled.
You are all dismissed. You may bother me again after the feast tonight.
The functionaries knew better than to argue. Many had replaced men who had lost their posts for doing so, and hastened to remove themselves from the warlock's presence. The warlock ducked quickly into a nearby vacant room. The tingling sensation grew stronger, and before him appeared a female form, roughly Roshan's size, with smooth skin the color of a fawn's fur, and tangled green hair that fell to the tops of her plump breasts. From beneath her hair curled two delicate horns, shaped like a ram's, but thinner. She was clad in a simple strapless gown of diaphanous white, and nothing else.
Her tiny bare feet hung just above the floor, with the tips of her toes just touching. Her overlarge brown eyes gulped in Rashan's image and she smiled.
"I was beginning to think you were not coming, Iliardra," Rashan said, returning the smile. He was always impressed with her command of ether.
The thunder of his own transference spell was enough to shake buildings.
Wasted ether, but impressive to the peasantry who knew no better. Hers took only herself, not a scoop from the world about her, and she could avoid alerting a sleeping dragon should she appear next to one. So subtle was the disruption she caused. Had he not been waiting on her appearance, he might have missed it himself.
"I considered not coming. You grow arrogant when everything you plan works out as you hope. But I am too curious to meet our son and see what sort of man he has become. It seems amazing that he has grown already," Iliardra replied. She floated over to a wall as she spoke and felt along it with a thin hand, trying to get a sense of the place in which she found herself.
"Time passes quickly out here. Blink and you could miss a lifetime. I imagine it to be even worse for your kind. Even your mortals can live 10 human lifetimes," Rashan said, moving closer to her.
"It is good to see you. I must say, though, that your appearance is inappropriate for the ceremony. You should alter it before I introduce you."
"I am not so ignorant of mortals, you know. I wore this for you."
"I have missed you, it seems." Iliardra met Rashan's gaze from a handspan away.
"I meant these." Rashan ran a finger gently along one of her horns, tracing the curve slowly and deliberately. "And these as well." He brushed aside her mop of hair and revealed ears too long for a human her size, reaching halfway to the top of her head and dropping just slightly.
"Iridan does not know."
"I will meet our son later. For now, I seek only you," Iliardra answered, letting her gown puddle quietly upon the floor.
A gaggle of servants fussed about Iridan, adjusting things that looked fine by his eye, polishing the metal bits of his warlock attire, and just generally being a nuisance about his person. He reached through the throng to retrieve a decanter of brandy and took a swig straight from it.
"There will be time enough to drink at the feasting," Dolvain chided him from across the small room, where he sat dutifully watching over his charge in the capacity of oathkeeper. He bore no love for the warlock. The favor was to Iridan himself, despite the warlock making the request. Iridan had always been one of his favorites, a shining light among the lowborn at the academy. Dolvain had fought the same battles in his youth, having to be twice as good as his blooded peers to achieve even half the respect they got. It was a blow to Dolvain to discover that his successor as champion of the unblooded sorcerers was of Solaran blood, from a strong branch of the line thought lost in the Battle of the Dead Earth.
"Well, unless the drinks at the feast will bear magic enough to calm my nerves now, I think this will work best," Iridan joked, taking a second pull from the decanter before setting it back down again.
"I killed those two boys this morning," Iridan thought. "I can't see how they could have survived those wounds. He knew it, but he was happy. Was he just going to keep finding harder and harder opponents as I improved? Until I lost my temper and used magic to win?"
Iridan drew a deep breath, drawing a clucking sound from the very proper little man who was trying to get his tunic straightened.
"So I marry Juliana in an hour or so. A few days and I will be sent off to the battlefields, ready or not. I think I can manage to survive a few days on my own with her. Maybe if I return home a war hero, she will take me seriously."
Iridan had been of a mind to refuse the arrangement, but Rashan had seemed quite set on it, since Juliana was a more proper match than any unwed girl in the Empire.
"I don't know that she'll ever love me. Not like she does Brannis. But at least maybe she will learn to respect me. I am a warlock now by the winds. I should not have to put up with her bullying anymore. I am not 8 springtimes old anymore,"
Iridan told himself, building up anger like a wall, one brick at a time, One of the attendants muttered a quiet spell and ran her fingers through Iridan's hair, shaping it in a dashing, side-swept style. "The wind might muss it now, and it will go back likewise afterward, Warlock," she told him. He had not caught her name, but she was dressed in Sixth Circle formal garb.
"And I thought being ward keeper was trivial work for a sorcerer. I should have counted myself lucky not to have been grooming grooms. Now that I am powerful, I need to remember not to look down on peasants. Not even peasant sorcerers."
A few doors down the hall, Juliana sat on a small velvet-cushioned stool and fumed. She had been angry with herself since she had woken.
"Spit on you, Soria. Why do you get to sit out this whole fiasco while I have to slog through it?"
It was less the feeling that Soria had abandoned her, staying awake the night through to keep from watching the wedding, than it was envy that she could not do likewise.
"There's nothing bad about Iridan, all things considered. I know he has a sense of humor. He is polite and well-positioned. I will want for nothing, just as it was growing up. Maybe even more so."
She tried positive thinking to cheer herself. It was the first time that Soria had abandoned her in a long while, not so much as peeking through the veil of worlds to watch her through her own eyes. The last time had been on her last ranking day. There had only been 4 of them left, and it had fallen much the way she had expected, just as it had the previous 2 years. She knew that she either had to throw her match or face Iridan in the final draw. She preferred to come in 3rd ranked than lose to Iridan, and threw a match before having to draw against him. Soria had hated that decision, and it was one of the few major disagreements the two of them had. Juliana hated the reminder that they were only mostly the same person, and not just the personas she adopted in each world. A tugging at her hair snapped her back from her mind's little momentary escape. 2 older servants were weaving her hair through some silly fan-like contraption perched atop her head.
"I must look like a peacock," she thought sourly.
Apparently her mother had worn the same piece at her own wedding, nearly 40 springtimes ago. She did not know what her mother had done to deserve such a fate, but she quietly suspected that she had done enough to vex her own mother during her short life to have warranted the ridiculous accessory as a small vengeance. After all, the entire day seemed bent on causing her embarrassment.
"I pictured this day 1,000 times as a little girl. It never looked like this."
When she had been very young, the groom had been some indistinct prince or knight. They seemed so much more dashing than sorcerers, in her daydreams. She started fixating on particular boys she liked as she matured into considering the actual prospect of marrying someone and not just getting married, finally settling on Brannis as the object of her fantasies. She had not been put into her gown yet. Old ladies were still fussing over its fold and making sure there were no blemishes on it. Instead, she sat in just a light slip, barefoot and bored. Everything would be dressed onto her. She would have little to do with the process but stand up, move a limb here or there upon request, and try to keep from mussing anything. In the meantime, Juliana reached quietly into the ether and lifted a wine glass from a small table laid out for the servants to pick from. It was a long morning, and there were to be no breaks for the staff until the ceremony was underway. There was nothing fancy about the vintage they were provided, but Juliana was no snob when it came to fermented grapes. "Some barefoot peasant stomped on these. How refined can it possibly be?" she had once argued to her father after spilling a valuable vintage.
"Milady, hold still," one of the old ladies complained from above, as she tilted her head back enough to down a swallow of wine.
"This will go a lot faster if I have something to occupy myself," she countered.
"Aye, maybe for you, your ladyship," the old woman shot back.
Juliana chuckled. She always preferred older servants. Beyond a certain age, they lost that obsequious veneer that got lacquered onto them.
Wherever it was that servants were trained,
you could actually talk to them without having them all agree with every inane thing you said.
Yes, m'lady, the sky is much too blue today. Of course, m'lady, I will bring your morning feast out to the stables.
M'lady, I would be delighted to take your pony to the market,
to let her pick out her own apples.
Juliana paused a moment in her musings.
I was a rotten little thing. No wonder Mother wants me to wear this silly hair thing. I probably deserve it.
When her hair was finally done, they had her stand to begin assembling her dress around her. The weight and size of her peacock's crest made her head wobble strangely as she moved. It only felt right when she kept her movements slow and her head steady.
Aha, now I see. If I do not keep dignified, the thing will pull my hair. Devious.
The gown was all white satin, with gold trim and embroidery. It covered from the tops of her breasts clear down to the floor, hugging her slender torso and billowing out like a bell to hide her skinny legs. If she held her arms straight out, she could make a long band of bare flesh from fingertip to fingertip across her collarbone, but that was about all that was left untouched upon her. Some young lass, who was probably 10 summers her senior and expert in life extension, came and reddened her lips, darkened her eyelids, and brightened the whites of her eyes. Juliana usually took care of her cosmetic magics herself, but the young sorceress was versed in making brides appear stunning, even when viewed from half a jouster's tilt away. At last, she stepped into her slippers. They were the plainest part of her wardrobe, chosen for comfort, in standing for extended periods rather than looks, the only kindness they had done her all day, by Juliana's reckoning. The length of her dress would hide them entirely. She had always wanted to wear heeled slippers on her wedding day, but she towered over Iridan as it was, they told her. She had then offered to go barefoot, and was met by stern, disapproving looks. She sighed.
Maybe when married life wears on me, I can see if Brannis would be convinced to take a mistress. The man is not made of stone.
Captain Varnus Coldlake cut an impressive figure as he stood guard over the door where Juliana dressed. A hulking mass of muscle wrapped in polished silver armor, which bore real, functional rune steel beneath the surface.
And bearing a heavy steel greatsword,
gleaming as it sat point first against the black marble floor, shot through with veins of green. Hard, ice-blue eyes scanned the corridor in either direction, clearing a path around him that servants and guests alike steered clear of. Though of a mind to wear a beard through the cold season, he was clean-shaven for the wedding, his weathered face finally getting the same view that his shiny, waxed pate normally got after a winter of being entombed in greasy black hair. It was a proud day for Varnus. While he was not to be the center of attention, he would be just slightly off-center, in full view of everyone worth knowing in the Empire. His position with House Archon was secure. His low birth limited his options for advancement anyway, but he liked the idea of being known. Juliana had done him quite the favor in naming him Oath Guardian. It was a ceremonial position, to be sure, hearkening back to the days when a treaty might ride on the continued virginity of a noble daughter up to the point of her wedding night. The thought was that a trusted knight would guard the honor of a lass of 14 summers or so, lest anyone overpower and defile her. They had not anticipated in that bygone era that the hereditary sorceress bloodlines would take up the idea and parade a soldier around with a sorceress of 20 and 3 autumns under the pretense of her needing his protection. Still, Varnus honored the tradition, keeping anyone from entering the room. At length, there was a knocking from within, and he took the key from around his neck and unlocked the door. Even with 1 in 6 guests being a member of the Imperial Circle, they used a mundane lock and key as tradition would have it. Juliana emerged, prettier than he had ever seen her, despite the funny fan thing they had done with her hair. She smiled up at him self-consciously, seeking approval.
"You look stunning, Lady Juliana," he offered.
There were days when he had trouble keeping her and Soria separate in his head, but today was not one of those. he could not envision Soria wearing such finery, without being in disguise at the least. Varnish sheathed his blade and offered Juliana his arm. It was his honor to escort her to the ceremony while his Archon House guards kept the halls clear as they made their way to the expansive front lawns of the palace. He could feel the tension in Juliana as she walked along beside him. She usually had such an ease about her, doing what she wanted, when she wanted. Being paraded about at the center of an event she would much rather have avoided entirely, she was trembling.
She manages to look happy enough. Most folk wouldn't know the difference. Hope she can keep the act up all day. That Iridan doesn't seem like a bad sort. Perhaps it'll grow on her.
When they exited the palace doors, they were greeted with a massive cheer from the assembled guests gathered upon the lawn. He handed the bride off to her father, who escorted her down an aisle in the middle of the throng, so that more of the attendees might see her, and brought her back again. Iridan would have already done the same before their arrival, escorted by his mother. The mother was a curious woman, Varnus noted. She was petite and looked young enough to have been Iridan's sister, with him the elder brother at that. She wore her hair a gaudy green color, unlike the more tasteful blondes and deep blacks that most Cadran sorceresses preferred, or even the more exotic reddish gold that Juliana and Lady Ophelia fancied. Her eyes seemed just a bit too large for her face as well. Juliana said she had heard Iridan's mother was immortal, but had no other information about her. She stood out from the warlock at her side, dressed in a plain white shoulderless gown of humble design. It contrasted with her creamy brown skin, making her look foreign among the fair-skinned native Cadrans. Iridan obviously took after his father's looks. With the pageantry out of the way, the blood scholars took over. Bookish sorts by nature, they seemed to thrive on being called away from their record-keeping duties to finalize the marriages their order arranged. Varnus paid scant attention to the names they gave, or the fables they recounted, or the history they invoked. It was dry, meaningless stuff, meant to lend dignity and weight to the art of picking out which two sorcerers got to rut in order to advance the breed. It worked the same with pigs, horses, or hunting dogs. Everyone knew it, but few folk spoke of it in earshot of a circle member. They knew it too, according to Juliana. The Blood Scholar's words were meant to remind them of their duty, of the upside, of being bred like cattle. In the crowd, Varnus noted Sir Brannis, the brawny knight standing out in both garb and build among his family on the Solaran side of the center aisle. He pitied the poor lad.
He's got the weight of the Empire on him, with the warlock over one shoulder and General Sir Harald Shadrisson hovering over the other, waiting for him to fail so that he can retake command of the army. Juliana ought to have married him instead. Would have made her happier anyway. Seemed like an upstanding one for a Solaran, even before the knights got hold of him.
He had barely known Brannis, remembering him more as a boy of 14 summers who had courted Juliana at the start of their doomed engagement. Protective as Varnus was of Juliana, he approved of the boy. He could be trusted to put himself between her and a sword blow. At length, the meat and gristle of the ceremony began. While the earlier pronouncements had been for the guests as much as the couple, the Blood Scholar turned his attention solely to Iridan and Juliana.
Iridan Solaran, warlock of the Imperial Circle, I call on you to make a binding oath. Swear before all present. Will you guard Juliana Archon against all harm?
I swear it, Iridan replied solemnly.
Will you place Juliana Archon's needs before your own? The Blood Scholar asked.
I swear it, Iridan answered.
Will you disavow all other claims against your wealth, your lands, and your heart, that Juliana may share equal claim of them?
I swear it, Iridan replied. His possessions were meager, and his heart unclaimed by any other.
will you raise your children under the guidance of the Imperial Circle, strengthening the Empire by joining your blood with hers? The Blood Scholar continued. I swear this as well, Iridan stated. Then swear your oath to your betrothed and pledge your life to her, the Blood Scholar instructed. Iridan turned to face Juliana. His voice caught in his throat for just a moment as their gazes locked. He saw in her eyes a trapped sort of fear that described his own feelings far more eloquently than he could have hoped to with words. I swear before all gathered here that I will join my life with yours. I will share your joys and comfort your sorrows. I will father your children and teach them strength and wisdom. I will stand by your side until the day of my death and wait for you beyond. Iridan managed to get through it all without his voice breaking, but they were the hardest words he had ever spoken. They were oppressively heavy words, whose weight he could barely stand to carry. He could only hope that he would live up to them. The elderly Blood Scholar nodded approvingly. He had no doubt seen more reluctant couples than the two before him, and had heard poorer oaths. Juliana Archon, Sorceress of the Sixth Circle, I call on you to make a binding oath. Swear before all present, will you guard Iridan Solaran against all treachery? I do swear, Juliana replied, inadvertently slipping up and mixing in the Keshi vows that Soria had learned.
Hold it together, Juliana, she told herself. Everyone is watching.
Will you place Iridan Solaran's needs before your own? The Blood Scholar asked.
I swear it, Juliana replied, allowing herself a tiny sigh of relief at getting it right on the second attempt.
Will you disavow all other claims against your wealth, your lands, and your heart, that Iridan may share equal claim of them?
I swear it, she lied.
Will you raise your children under the guidance of the Imperial Circle, strengthening the Empire by joining your blood with his? The Blood Scholar continued.
I swear this as well, Juliana agreed.
Then swear your oath to your betrothed and pledge your life to him, the Blood Scholar instructed.
I swear before all gathered here that I will join my life with yours. I will share your joys and comfort your sorrows. I will bear your children and teach them loyalty and compassion. I will stand by your side until the day of my death and wait for you beyond, Juliana recited. Just words. No magic to them at all. They only have the power I allow them to have. They probably should have had Iridan pledge the loyalty part, though.
Now, if you will clasp hands, the Blood Scholar requested.
They complied, reaching out tentatively for one another. Juliana's hands were damp with sweat. She noticed his were shaking.
By the authority of the Kadran Empire and her regent, I declare you wedded. May your union last 100 springtimes.
The crowd waited, hushed and expectant. She knew what was expected of them, and they came together shyly, Juliana bending down to bring her face level with Iridan's. Everyone is watching, she thought. Just do it and be done with it.
Juliana closed her eyes and pictured Brannis as their lips met, hearing the eruption of cheering from the crowd as they kissed. Their kiss broke off with a start as a trumpeting call blared from high above. 3 sailing ships sped through the sky above, circling their wedding guests and playing a fanfare. The gleaming hulls were freshly painted light blue and white, matching the midday sky. Trumpeters lined the railing that faced the crowd, wearing alternating tabards of Solaran yellow and Archon green. The crowd cheered anew at the sight, and Iridan and Juliana were spared the intense focus on them as gazes turned skyward to take in the spectacle.
A parting gift from the crews of your new airships, Brannis? Juliana mused. You have always known what to do to make me feel better.
Varnas had worried that Juliana would get a bit of Soria in her, as he called it when she acted without regard for anything but her own interest. To his relief,
the ceremony went much as planned. His eyes kept sweeping through the crowd, looking for trouble in the habit of one who has spent most of his life as a personal guard. It was his training that perked up his senses as he noticed a flinch in Iridan's mother. Something had caught her attention, though she showed only the barest hint of distraction. It was enough to set Varnus on edge, to the point where his hand strayed to his sword hilt. The guest's attention was drawn away from the palace steps, and even the warlock's attention was on the skies above, when a man appeared out of nowhere behind the warlock. Naked but for a loincloth, and covered in painted runes, he carried a wicked-looking rune dagger in one hand, poised close enough to lunge for Warlock Roshan. The assassin's eyes widened as he made his strike, unprepared for the warlock's reaction. Roshan spun, catching his assailant by the wrist and twisting, forcing the man to the ground. In the span of a heartbeat, the man was thrashing futilely on the ground, with the warlock's small, booted foot pressed to his throat. Only a few had taken notice of the attack, and Roshan cast a quick illusion over the strange assailant to hide him from the unobservant among the crowd. Brennus's sword hand had not even reached the hilt of Avalanche before all had been rendered safe by the warlock's actions. "You are nearly done. Pay this no mind and finish, if you please," Roshan told the Blood Scholar, who had been one of the few either close enough or circumspect enough to have noticed the disturbance amid the fanfare. Rather than orating on the future that Iridan and Juliana were to be expected to share together, the Blood Scholar wisely made a few brief remarks and adjourned everyone to the feast as soon as decorum allowed. The warlock kept his attention on the speaker, allowing his would-be assassin just enough air to breathe to keep him alive. It was an awkward end to a wedding, but it was better than Varnus had expected. Roshan threw his attacker to the floor of a small storage room, a level below the palace's main floor, where he had dragged him immediately following the ceremony. The paint from his body had smeared the floors all along the way, leaving blood mixed in as well, as not all of the palace's floors were polished smooth, and certainly not the stairs to the servants' levels. "So you were sent by the Magrin, I assume," Roshan began. "I admit, I am impressed at your boldness and your skill at stealth. I did not notice you until it was almost too late." "One demon I was prepared to kill. Two, I was not ready for," the man confessed. His accent sounded familiar to Roshan, but 100 winters of exile from the mortal world had muddied dialects in his absence. "I do not know what strange magic stripped my spell from me, but I think it was not your own." "Yes, take pride that you fooled me, at least," Roshan conceded. He looked the dagger over appraisingly. "You were dead the moment you used this thing, you know. It would have sucked your source dry in an attempt to destroy mine." Roshan paused a moment, concentrating his attention on a few key runes, then studying his attacker's source. "It might have worked, too." "I was glad to die to rid the world of you," the man proclaimed. "I would have been a hero." "Well, hero, take heart that I have little thought to keep you alive for information. As one warrior to another, if you tell me where you would like your body sent, I will see it return to your people," Roshan said.
"Someone is going to pay for this," Roshan thought. "And one life is not going to suffice."
The man studied the warlock's face, but found it impassive, betraying no insight to the demon's thoughts.
"Truly?" he asked warily.
"You will be dead before the first course of the wedding feast is over, whether you tell me or not. The only difference is whether I send your body home or feed it to whatever lives down in the sewers these days. I have neither the patience nor the inclination to torture. It is the idle amusement of a sick mind, and no proper pastime for a warlock," Roshan bluffed.
"Come now, put a name to your homeland for me. I will bring your body to them, of course. I would hate for them all to die confused, with no explanation for my anger at them."
"Hunua. It is a small island in the western half of Gardanel," the man admitted. "Do you know it?"
"I do.
Thank you, demon. Die well, and soon.
The assassin closed his eyes and resigned himself to his fate. Brannis could not help glancing down the long feast table to where the bride and groom shared the head. Off in another part of the palace grounds from the ceremony, they supped out of doors in the new springtime air. Fires blazed all about, warring with the stubborn vestiges of a winter too bold to retreat upon its celestial expiration. A fire a few paces behind him was enough to warm Brannis against the worst of the afternoon breezes. He wondered whether his proximity was by good fortune or design. A great many sorcerers feasted that day, and all but the least among them could protect themselves against such paltry inconvenience as weather. Juliana looked gorgeous, preened to display her beauty, rather than flaunting it as she often did. Brannis understood the difference, and obviously so did whoever styled her gown and jewelry.
She is trying so hard. That toothy grin is not hers, though. I have seen every smile she has.
Brannis wondered what it would have been like in Iridan's place. It had been on his mind the whole of the ceremony, including the point where he would have drawn his blade to protect Juliana against the would-be assassin. Brannis took another long swallow of his drink. The ale was weak, to keep the feast going longer, and to moderate the drunkenness of the guests as the night wore on.
"When will they get their gifts?"
Denilasis asked, seated next to him. He had kept quiet through the wedding, for which Brannis had been thankful, but apparently the reprieve was at an end.
"Not likely until tomorrow. They must have gotten hundreds, and the feasting will last all night," Brannis replied.
"Not all night, Grandfather said."
"They..." Denilasis began, but Brannis cut him short.
"No, stop right there. I know, and I know you know. I do not need to hear it," Brannis told him.
He glared over the top of Danilasis' head at his grandfather.
"Did you really need to tell him all that?"
"What, the truth? Of course not. I could lie to him like his father and blather on about babies popping in from the ether. I could tell him women have the same bits as men beneath their robes, and that they get married because they love each other. But then he goes and finds out different, and thinks us all liars. Well, he shall know his grandfather will tell him true, and that is worth something,"
Axtarion said, not quite facing Brannis as he spoke. The ancient wizard was nearly blind, and used ether vision to get by. With his weak source, Brannis was hard to see either way.
"I sometimes wonder if you enjoy being thought senile, old man. You get away with far more than if more folk realized your wits were mainly intact."
"So you would tell him about torture and rape, necromancy, that sort of stuff, should he just ask?"
Brannis tried to make his stubborn old grandfather see where such roads led.
"Nasty stuff, all of it. Wonderful stories, though, if you have a mind for it. Better to be repulsed by it early than build up curiosity for years. Brannis, my boy, you were always good about it, but do not forget that the truth is always the best path. Do not let that 71st great uncle of yours, or whatever he is, convince you otherwise," Axtarion said.
Brannis turned his attention back to his meal, tiring of trying to reason with Axtarion. The old man had been high sorcerer before his years caught up to him, and left him using all his power to hold on to life, with none left for working magic. He was a veteran of too many arguments to count, and refused defeat even when logic sided against him.
"Pardon me,"
Brannis heard a voice in his head. His eyes widened in surprise. He looked furtively up and down the table to see who might have tried to get his attention.
"My name is Iliardra, Iridan's mother. I have not yet had the chance to make your acquaintance. I sense that your source is not strong enough to reply, so merely listen a moment. When the dancing begins, which ought to be shortly, ask me to dance. I wish to speak with you."
Brannis looked down to the head of the table again, but not seeking Juliana for once. He saw the strange immortal whom Roshan had brought to the wedding. It was clear she was not human, at least in so much as Roshan was no longer human. She appeared as she wished, by agency of whatever magic she chose to use. Brannis waited until the music changed from peaceful melodies for dining to boisterous songs for dancing. As couples made their way to a nearby stone terrace to dance, Brannis approached the warlock's consort. He realized he had never asked their relationship, or whether Iridan was born a bastard. She seemed otherworldly, much less similar to human than Roshan was. The warlock kept his appearance as it had been in his own youth. Iliardra had been much less bound in her choice of form. "My lady, I am Sir Brannis Soloran, Grand Marshal of the Imperial Armies. Might I have the pleasure of a dance?" Brannis was glad that many of the folk at the table had already adjourned to the dance floor, including the newly married couple. The guests had not made a fuss over it, considering the circumstances, but the warlock had not yet appeared at the feast. Word had spread about the assassin that had tried to kill Roshan, and everyone seemed to assume he was off somewhere dealing with the matter. Most had a "better him than me" attitude about the whole thing. It was a more jovial atmosphere without Roshan around anyway. In truth, many were scared of the warlock's mere presence.
"I would be delighted, Sir Brannis."
Iliardra extended a hand and allowed Brannis to help her to her feet. She weighed almost nothing. It felt like he was helping a cloud rise from the seat she had occupied. She rose from the ground as they danced, lest the vast difference in height make both the steps and the conversation awkward. They drew curious glances, but mostly due to the unfamiliar face in the large clique that was the Imperial Circle and their families. Floating in the air was simple magic, not enough to impress jaded old eyes.
"So tell me about my son," she asked.
She bounded and twirled along with Brannis so expertly that her eyes never left his as she spoke.
"Roshan spoke highly of you and said you were the best of Iridan's friends. Why then were you not his oathkeeper?"
"It is a long story, but I was once betrothed to Juliana Archon. I suppose Roshan wanted to guard me against doing something silly and romantic. Iridan and I have been friends since the academy. I was there until I was 14 summers, and they gave up on me ever showing any promise. I used to protect him from Juliana when we were all little. She used to beat him."
Brannis was not sure why he chose to introduce Iliardra to her son that way.
"Maybe because that seems to sum him up so well. He always needed protecting.
And now Roshan wishes to make him a warlock. Perhaps he thinks to toughen him up by foisting his tormentor upon him as a wife."
"My, what changes a few seasons can wreak," she said, then laughed. It was a melodic laugh, with a smile that seemed so much more at ease than Juliana's fake one.
"Well, that was 14 winters ago," Brannis commented.
A whiff of fragrance from a petal as it falls from a rose. "That is the length of 14 winters," Iliardra said softly, looking deep into Brannis's eyes.
"Do you have any idea how old I am?"
"By your looks, 20 springtimes and no more. But I know better. You are a mortal, and choose whatever appearance you wish. By your words, I would guess you are closer to Roshan's age," Brannis ventured.
Mortal women were so sensitive about age, he did not want to risk angering her by guessing any older than that. Rather than taking offense, she laughed.
"My dear Brannis, you are so tactful. You wish not to offend me, but missed the mark by kingdoms. I was old when Cadran was founded, a little city-state in the wilderness, carved out in the shadow of the elder woods and brash enough to name itself an empire. I knew Galen, whose staff your people seem to have misplaced, and mighty Talax, 2,000 winters dead when Galen was born."
Roshan, being 242 summers old, was a hard thing to grasp at times. He was a creature of a different age, who lived in a much different Cadran from the one that now stood. He had no reason to disbelieve Iliardra's claim, ludicrous though it seemed on its face,
but the span of summers defied Brannis's comprehension. Talax was a real man? Was the best response Brannis could muster out of the information he had just absorbed. I was taught that he was just a legend. Oh, he was a legend for certain, but a real man as well. Your ancestors used to claim his blood ran within them. He never unlocked the secret to immortality, but kept alive over 700 summers on life extension alone. All that is true, Iliardra said.
And his source? Brannis asked, his love of history brimming to the surface. Was it as strong as the stories said?
It is so hard to compare such things, especially across so many years. But men in that age said that his source hurt to look upon, Iliardra said.
As the music slowed, the couple's dancing did as well. Iliardra drifted lower and closer, and rested her head against Brannis's chest.
Brannis, your obvious love of history is endearing to one who has seen so much of it, and finds too many who care not. That reason is why I so seldom visit the mortal world. It seems so foreign and unwelcoming. I had come to visit Roshan and to meet my son. When I look in my son's eyes, I see disbelief and denial. I saw how he looked to the guests at the wedding. The couple that we sent him to be fostered with were there, and I saw in that look
the love a son bears for his mother.
I bore Roshan a son, but I did not mother one. Iridan fears me and what I represent, a mother he never knew, and a heritage he does not understand. So my son avoids me, and my Roshan has gone off. He used a transference spell shortly after the ceremony, and I could not see far enough to know where he went. Brannis, you are a clever boy. Where might he have gone?
Brannis could think of only one option when he thought of Roshan. Vengeance. Did he ever tell you of his philosophy, to let none live who have tried to harm him?
Iliardra nodded sadly.
I can only surmise that he went to find out who sent that assassin, and is laying waste to whatever city they might be in.
He can be so thoughtful at times. He was always full of vigor and ideas. He did things. He did not just wonder aloud about them, as so many of our kind fall into the habit of. But he has this killing lust within him as well, that try as he might, he could never overcome. Now, it seems, he has stopped trying entirely, and is giving in to his base need to spill blood.
He left without even telling me,
leaving me alone among strangers, with a son who denies me in his heart.
Brannis did not know what to say to that, so he wisely said nothing. He allowed the neglected immortal to spill her sorrows upon his doublet and continue talking as they floated about the terrace in time with the music.
We have each lost someone today, someone who was already gone, but whom we could not let go. Roshan has no special claim on my heart. I am not his wife nor his concubine. Juliana is now wed to another, no longer seemly to dream of. Let us spend this night in each other's comfort.
She lifted her head and looked up at him. Her eyes brightened when they met his and she smiled.
I have always preferred younger men.
The next morning, Brannis strode down the halls from his room to the practice yard, where he expected the warlock to be, if indeed he had seen fit to return from whatever burning city he had likely left in his wake. He was wearing his armor again, a precaution he felt more than justified by the assassin's attempt on Roshan the previous day. He was far less equipped to defend himself than Roshan. Without his armor,
he was ripe to be killed should Magrin send someone to end his life.
Despite Iliardra's assurances that Roshan had no hold over her, and that she had no intention of mentioning their liaison, he approached the warlock with some trepidation. Any servant who had seen them could have reported them adjourning to Brannis's chambers for the night. None would believe that they had talked for hours until Brannis fell asleep from exhaustion, and perhaps just a bit of magic.
Roshan always figures out too much for the amount of information he has.
Any hint of a tryst in Brannis's life would hang on whether Roshan was the jealous type. Brannis did not like his odds on that wager. As he walked along, he saw someone approaching from one of the side corridors. He stopped short, recognizing Juliana's distinct form, forever etched into his psyche, out of the corner of his eye. Her hair was a disastrous mess, not just uncoiffed, but snarled and tangled. Her black sixth circle robes hung loose about her thin frame, not cinched at the waist as she usually wore them. And she had her arms tucked into the opposite sleeves, hugging them close to her body. What really drew Brannis's attention was her face, wickedly reddened on one side, with a swollen knot beneath the eye that would surely turn purple with a bit of time. Juliana backed up a step tentatively as Brannis rushed over to her, her eyes widening as if unsure of what to do. "What happened?" Brannis demanded, sounding both concerned and angry at once.
"We argued. It just happened. Everything is fine." Juliana's voice trembled. I was just on my way to ask Roshan if Iridan can skip his training today.
"Iridan did this to you?" Brannis asked, trying to keep calm so as not to sound like he was blaming her.
"I said something I shouldn't have," Juliana protested, but Brannis shook his head.
"That is no excuse," Brannis told her. "Go see someone about that lump." Brannis strode off in the direction she had just come from, moving at twice the pace and with far less uncertainty than he had felt when preparing to approach the warlock.
"Brannis," Juliana called after him. "I can look after myself. You do not need to save me," she shouted as he grew too far to converse with at any lower volume.
She drew a deep breath and loosed it raggedly.
"It is nice to know he still cares."
She would have felt a bit better had Brannis not had a hand on Avalanche's hilt as he rushed off to defend her honor.
"If my children grow to be tall, strong, and brave like him, I will just have to say they took after my father."
Shader Archon was not so different in frame from Brannis, even if he lacked the muscle.
"Instead of their own."
She continued to the practice yard, where indeed she found the warlock awaiting Iridan's arrival. He sat with her new oath uncle, Caladris, as the portly sorcerer took his morning feast.
"Iridan will not be coming down for practice this morning," Juliana interrupted them, startling Caladris with her quiet, timid approach.
"My dear girl, what happened?" Caladris asked.
"Nothing. I am fine," she answered.
"It was a long while ago, but I got married too. Twice, you know. And that is not a typical result." Caladris tried to keep the mood light, but Roshan was intent on darkening it. "Iridan did that." Roshan did not even form the observation as a question. He scowled as he inspected Juliana's injuries.
"I pushed a bit too far. I know I sometimes do not think before saying things that might be hurtful. I started it," Juliana said,
but Roshan was apparently indifferent to her explanation. "I will have a talk with that boy," he growled. Caladris quietly excused himself in the opposite direction as Roshan made to leave the yard.
"You are just as bad as Brannis," Juliana muttered beneath her breath, but had not counted on the warlock's excellent hearing.
"Brannis saw you like that?" Roshan demanded, his eyes widening. The warlock took off at a run. When he was gone, Juliana quietly pulled her hands out of her sleeves. The knuckles were raw and bloody.
"Soria, are you watching today? If you are, tell me how you managed not to ruin your knuckles."
Roshan saw the door to Iridan's chamber wide open, with a pair of the palace guards flanking it. Whatever orders they might have been given, Brannis was authorized to countermand. He rushed past them to find Brannis standing next to a pool of blood.
"What did you do?"
he shouted at Brannis, torn as to whether he should chastise the general of his armies or just slay him where he stood. It was not me. Brennus turned to face the warlock, clean of any blood. The warlock came around the side of the bed to see Iridan curled up on his side, a bloody pillow propped under his head, and a blanket over him. His face was a gory mess.
Perhaps I ought to reconsider which of them to train as a warlock, Rashan commented.